The culture of God Ra. A light breeze skimmed the surface of the lake, causing gentle ripples. The stirred dark blue water seemed to transform into a multifaceted sapphire, reflecting various shades as it exposed each of its tiny facets to the sun. The sun shone brightly, not afraid of the mischievous wind. Instead, it worked in harmony with it. While the hot rays, sometimes excessive in their strength, could scorch everything they touched, the gentle breeze visiting the secluded corner of nature spared living creatures from this unpleasant prospect. On the shore, there was complete tranquility. Large, bright green grass stems radiating life energy also couldn't resist the charm of the wind. As it swiftly touched them with its invisible wings, they slightly bowed to the ground. Here and there, dense thickets gave way to golden sand. Whole strings of different footprints stretched across it, from more delicate ones left by women's shoes and sandals with fragile soles to rougher, more massive ones clearly made by men. The shore was patterned with these tracks. Birds seemed to gaze in wonder at the marvelous pattern revealed from the height of their flight. However, people couldn't ascend to the sky and instantly survey the land. So they didn't know they had become the creators of such beauty by stepping along this previously unfamiliar shore. But they knew exactly what brought them here. It was the call of knowledge. The knowledge that is all-encompassing and eternal, containing all the secrets of the universe's order and human life. Knowledge that becomes the center of consciousness, purifying the soul and opening up unique opportunities for self-improvement. Young girls and guys, middle-aged women and men, remarkably energetic, as if just beginning to explore this world, all came here today and settled on the shore of this quiet lake to transform the invaluable treasures of self-observation, daily spiritual efforts, and reflections on the knowledge received from the keeper of knowledge into rays of inner light. People settled on the sand or on their blankets and looked with hope at the keeper of knowledge, who, rising on a small platform, inimitable in his mystical attire, greeted them with an inspired and wise expression on his noble face. Having enjoyed themselves enough and seemingly paying homage to the great power of the mind, the breeze decided to leave this tranquil place and its temporary inhabitants and set out to conquer other lands. Now there were no ripples on the lake's surface, and the shimmering sapphire blue turned into smooth lapis lazuli. When all the disciples had taken their places safely, the master summoned the flow of energy necessary for each of the attendees to realize the importance of spiritual development and confidently tread this path.
"Happy to see you all here again, my dear ones,"
echoed his measured voice, which had the extraordinary ability to spread throughout the space with powerful vibrations.
"Look at the surface of the lake."
He pointed with his hand to the landscape unfolding before the disciples in all its beauty, as if an artist trying to capture a moment.
"You probably think you can dive into its waters up to your waist, but don't believe the illusion. That's only near the shore. The farther you dive, the deeper you will feel it. The same goes for knowledge. Until we begin to learn, to enlighten ourselves in all aspects, we often think that what we know is quite enough. However, as we progress, as we journey towards it, we come to understand that knowledge has a very great depth. So don't be afraid to ask questions, as they help you immerse yourself in this vast reservoir and feel at home in it like a fish in water."
When the keeper concluded his introductory speech, which always stirred in the disciples an incredible motivation to move forward, the first question came from the mouth of an elderly woman with shoulder-length hair, beautifully curling at the ends.
"Master, one of the disciples asked us about the existing religions. There are so many of them."
"What religions?"
echoed the keeper's loud voice, as if in response.
First and foremost, it's worth noting that every religion is associated with a center. As many centers as people have, so many cults exist. For example, the most primitive is the so-called religion of the instinctive center. This is the religion of the instinctive center, the essence of which lies in satisfying the simplest desires, eating, sometimes excessively, indulging in alcohol and drugs. This is the cult of the instinctive center. It receives a lot of attention, and accordingly, many people are engaged in it. The cult of the instinctive center exists constantly, so the desire of a person to overeat and abuse of harmful habits never loses its strength. There is another cult, the cult of the motor center. Everything related to sports belongs to it. A person whose priority is the cult of the motor center devotes their free time to watching competitions. For example, football matches. Some people literally deify football players. Followers of this cult even adapted the image of Christ to the object of their worship, depicting the Son of God as a football player kicking a ball.
How interesting,
remarked the woman, neatly jotting down the incredible wisdom of the keeper in her notebook with a fine, careful handwriting, knowing that it would help her reflect and ask new questions.
Yes, it's incredibly interesting,
agreed the master, and continued.
There is a cult of the sexual center, reproduction. Many films and books delve into the topic of partner relationships. This cult is present absolutely everywhere, without exaggeration.
At this point, the keeper raised his index finger, wanting to show the disciples that, contrary to their assumptions, the discussion was not about something base and vulgar.
The sexual center is not quite an ordinary center. It is the highest,
he declared, emphasizing the term highest. For many of those present, the idea that the physiological need for reproduction could have a lofty nature was incomprehensible. Therefore, exchanging glances, the disciples focused their attention and all turned their heads towards the master. Meanwhile, he continued,
the instinct of reproduction tells us that this energy should go outward, towards children, grandchildren. That is, the cult redirects our energy outward. But if we direct sexual energy towards the development of the inner world, then a person begins to flourish from sexual energy. They accumulate it and direct it towards self-discovery and self-development. Then within them, an elevated divine state is formed. Unfortunately, the cult of the sexual center often receives improper embodiment. People don't know how to handle it. Everything happens banally, mechanically. All the energy either dissipates into primitive physiological pleasure or is directed towards the next generations in the family, leaving nothing for the individual. If people knew how to handle this power, they would cultivate it within themselves and achieve unprecedented flourishing, a divine state. It would help them become better, perfect, if only they knew.
The sage's spiritual face became almost stern. He wanted everyone, absolutely everyone, to believe in their own abilities and reach the highest level of intellect, the great privilege given to them, unlike animals and plants. And he was uncompromising towards anything that could hinder this. After all, even a tree, devoid of the ability to think, grows towards the heavens, striving for something high and eternal.
Master,
rang out the clear voice of the youngster with thick black hair.
What is the cult that revolves around all the armed conflicts between people? The cult of war?
I was just about to discuss this cult, and you, young man, seem to have read my mind.
The severity vanished instantly from the keeper's face, replaced by a light, joyful smile.
Let's start with the fact that there is a cult of the emotional center. For now, it mainly manifests in various negative emotions. Suppose people thirst for blood revenge. In order to take revenge on someone, they strive to wipe their offender off the face of the earth or even start wars. So the cult of war is also the cult of the emotional center, where negative emotions are cultivated among the masses and become the cause of wars, massacres, revolutions, in general, global destructive phenomena. Many people express dissatisfaction, and this negative emotion reaches monstrous proportions. Despite the existence of positive emotions, the emotional cult is mainly associated with the negative. People start to foster indignation, spread it, and it turns into a great calamity.
War only leads to destruction,
decisively stated the dark-haired youngster, looking straight into the eyes of the sage.
Of course,
nodded the master, looking at all the people present at once. It always worked out for him in some remarkable way.
What fruits does war yield? Hundreds of killed and maimed people who remain disabled. That's what this cult leads to. Instead of elevated emotions, the opposite is cultivated.
Having said this, the master made a pause in his speech, indicating to the disciples that attention should be directed to how his words affected their inner state. The girl with the neat bun on her head closed her eyes, and immediately, horrifying war scenes flashed in her consciousness. Orphan children, all scarred, poor, tortured, bodies of young soldiers who never tasted life, fields sown with bullets, and skies shrouded in a gray veil of sorrow. The darkest images imaginable.
Why does humanity need a cult of war?
Wondered the girl, a small crystalline tear already streaming down her cheek.
War is too senseless and tragic to turn it into a whole cult.
And so thought all the disciples, feeling that the time had come to share with dozens of matured minds a new portion of knowledge. The sage continued.
Back in the era of the USSR, they constantly, almost every day, showed films about war and revolution. This was necessary so that people would prepare for war and enthusiastically go to die for Brezhnev. There were many such films, and this is also a separate cult. In the intellectual center, it acquired the status of a cult of science. In the past, people believed in God, in sacred scriptures, but now they say, scientists have proven, and blindly believe scientists. Any scientist can come up with, for example, fecal therapy. By studying feces, he will find some trace elements, vitamins, useful substances in its composition. Then he will put forward a theory, according to which it is necessary to consume excrement to improve one's health. And everyone will blindly follow this advice, because scientists say so. That's what the cult of science is about, formulating foolish conclusions, theories, practices, making absurd discoveries, and blindly following these new trends.
The lake held its silence. But among the disciples, a wave of contagious laughter swept through. The prospect of such zero-waste production amused everyone. Even the keeper himself allowed himself to smile widely, almost childishly. Such scientific theories always amused him.
Master,
addressed him a young woman with a face sprinkled with freckles and deep dimples on her cheeks.
What about the religions we know? Christianity, Islam, Buddhism. To which center do they belong?
We have the highest emotional center, which is associated with higher emotions. And only from this center stem normal religions, Christianity, Islam. If people feel the call of elevated emotions, they begin to follow the path of religion. Some embrace Christianity, some go to Islam, and some to Hinduism, Krishnaism, where elevated emotions are cultivated. These can already be called true religions. Not just cults like the instinctive center cult, or the sports cult. There is also the highest intellectual center, which reflects true religions associated with enlightenment. When we rise above all misconceptions and prejudices, begin to work with all the twists of our multifunctional brain, perceive the world and life through all centers as they are. This is already the religion of inner awakening. The more a person understands the highest intellectual center, the more they comprehend the laws of being, and the more enlightened they become.
Spreading his hands to the sides and once again enveloping everyone with his attention, the keeper gave his voice a special tone and summarized.
So now, dear students, you know what cults exist and where they come from.
While the attendees eagerly absorbed every word spoken by the keeper in this multifaceted world of knowledge, they also expanded their attention to realize the beauty among which they were fortunate to find the light of the soul today. The deep blue lake quietly sparkled in the sun's radiant glints. The lush grass caressed the gaze and brought peace in the heart. A fragile stem cut, and the life-giving juice would ooze out from its young body for a long time. Footprints in the sand, untouched by the rogue wind, were still a mysterious sight.
Master!
An elderly man with transparent gray-blue eyes and thin lips that merged into a single line addressed the master.
Am I correct in understanding your religion? Is it where you direct your energy, your attention? What you deify becomes your religion, and consequently your God.
The man's voice was slightly hoarse and trembled, as if it were not a voice at all, but a glass vessel with thin walls.
Yes, of course.
Agreed the keeper with the very interesting conclusion of his insightful disciple.
We are not so much directing our energy as the center that becomes more active under the influence of external or internal factors, compels us to do so. For example, the instinctive center begins to work more strongly, and our involuntary attention is riveted to it. All we want to do is relieve ourselves, consume food, immerse ourselves in sleep. This is followed by a desire to taste harmful habits. The instinctive center literally dictates to us what to do. And only when it comes to conscious effort,
the keeper raised his index finger again,
that's when we begin to direct our attention ourselves. Initially, for example, an impulse came from the highest emotional center, and we experienced an elevated state. We felt an aspiration towards something higher, towards God.
The master raised his hands up and, joining his palms above his head, fell silent. At that moment, the disciples also raised their hands and joined their palms to feel the higher power within themselves and to sense their connection to the divine.
This coveted impulse worked and attention involuntarily yielded to it,
continued the keeper, still not separating his palms.
Then a person begins to read smart books, studies Christianity, Islam, or Krishnaism, and to their surprise, notices. It won't last forever. The influence has shifted to some very good aspect.
The master's voice changed, and it seemed to everyone that the statement came from the lips of a completely different person. In such a skillful manner, he mastered his voice.
Next, we ourselves must cultivate elevated emotions. They cannot come on their own. They arise, lead us to aspiration, to some religion, to something spiritual. But then they can disappear. When the aspect fades away, we must cultivate the necessary emotions ourselves. Not passively and meaninglessly, wait for grace to descend upon us again. The aspect may repeat only after 30 years, for example. So why wait for its return, when we can immediately take matters into our own hands?
The keeper opened his palms and, stretching his hands in front of him, clasped them together, demonstrating the will of man for self-improvement. The disciples tried to do the same and found that this simple action, seemingly unrelated to the inner world, somehow gave them confidence.
Master, I think...
A shy voice of a young boy in glasses was heard.
I think that every person should realize that their attention is involuntary. They notice some impulse, as you said, and yield to it, however absurd it may seem. Otherwise, we would take everything under control, analyze which direction this impulse has taken us. Of course, it's interesting, but we only act as observers. We examine the impulse but do not identify with it. At the same time, we contemplate what goal we want to achieve and understand that our goal is completely different. That is, a person must consciously redirect their focus to achieve this genuine goal and not succumb to any false impulses that arise and hinder us from moving in the right direction. One impulse leads us in one direction, another in another, and as a result, we cannot come anywhere. But if we choose a goal, then we go straight to it and try not to pay attention to such provocations.
Surprisingly, the boy's previously uncertain, almost trembling voice took on a completely different coloring as he spoke the truths so obvious after the guardian's explanations. Even the keeper himself noted this pleasant metamorphosis with satisfaction.
Absolutely right.
He encouraged the boy's eagerness to apply knowledge.
You reason correctly, not allowing your brain to gather dust like a forgotten book on a shelf. Of course, a myriad of different impulses distract us. They call us in one direction, then in another, create obstacles, drive us away from the path, eventually puts us to sleep.
It was the culmination of the master's speech, for his voice at that moment acquired unprecedented power.
We must remember our goal, direct all our attention to it, and consciously move towards it. That will be the real religion, because a creative power will awaken within us, and blind faith in meaningless impulses will leave us altogether.
The boy in glasses nodded, and a radiant smile appeared on his face. He was immensely grateful to the keeper for bringing clarity to his reasoning. The master fulfilled the role of an enlightened guide, leading people through the caves of ignorance, sharp rocks of doubts, and exhausting deserts of misconception. Those who, following him, firmly walked the path, could hope to receive the most valuable reward.
Master!
A voice was heard near the lake. It was a young girl with her long blonde hair, which, in the sun, looked like ripe ears of wheat, resembling a mermaid stranded on the shore, addressed the keeper, thus interrupting the chain of her silent reflections.
Can it be said that the cult defines the leading center? For example, if a person's center is Muladhara, then they are physically developed. If the emotional center is realized, then negative emotions or the cult of material things prevail in a person. That is, a person tends to follow certain trends, right? Is this a mechanical cult? And if they start to wake up, make efforts for development, then step by step, they move away from harmful cult and choose another beneficial one?
Of course, some center in a person is more developed.
Scratching his chin, the master agreed.
There are people whose intellectual, emotional, or motor center is more developed. Depending on which center is more developed, a person goes in that direction. For example, you all know so-called pickup trainers. What do you think? Which center is more developed in them?
Probably the sexual one.
Thoughtfully scratch the heap of his black hair. The boy who previously asked about the cult of war.
Of course,
exclaimed the keeper, nodding several times.
Most pickup trainers are born with a hyperactive sexual center. In their youth, they are usually drawn into a similar sphere. One such trainer was constantly meeting new people. And then he started writing books in which he laid out instructions on socializing. Why did he get into all this? Because his sexual center is more developed than others. It was impulses from it that attracted a lot of attention to him. Overdeveloped sexual organs. That's the result.
Master,
remarked the man with curly chestnut hair and a small scar on his left cheek.
And if other organs are developed, what does it say about the dominance of certain centers?
Of course, other organs can be developed,
said the sage.
One organ may be larger in size, another, on the contrary, smaller. Depending on this, The centers also act differently.
The mermaid-haired girl who settled right next to the lake noticed the water beginning to bubble near the sand. A moment later, a tiny frog cautiously emerged from it, but, frightened by such a large number of people, it hid back in the water and, with a powerful push of its webbed feet, swam back in the opposite direction. The keeper placed his beautiful hand on the armrest of the chair, and the most attentive disciples noted that their attention was totally captured by this simple gesture of the master. It was conscious and whole as everything the keeper of knowledge did or said. And he continued,
"Someone has the strongest instinctive center, which means an overdeveloped intestine or an enlarged liver. These organs work intensively, and as a result, a person constantly wants to eat, gets filled with food as if they were a huge barrel. Some programs are initially set for us by nature. By its decree, certain centers are more developed. But when we gain true knowledge, we understand that some impulses can distract us, so we consciously start to drive the direction of our attention. From the moment we know this, we move decisively towards our goal, paying no attention to what kind of intestine or liver we have."
The next question was asked by the girl with very delicate facial features. She resembled an elegant heron. Strands of her reddish hair fell on her shoulders, falling out from the long braids, slightly tousled by the mischievous wind.
"Master,"
she addressed the keeper, and everyone was invigorated by the majestic voice, contradicting her refined appearance.
"It turns out there are cults associated with the center, and there are those created deliberately, for example, fashion. That is, it's a cult which goal is to attract people who are in a passive state, as many as possible. A person is imposed with a fashionable trend, a goal that they begin to strive for. Essentially, each person has both internal and external motivations, such as, for example, buying a car. A sort of lone cult has also been created, to which people devote their entire lives and energy. Isn't that so?"
When the girl stopped speaking, the master, once again delighted by the rich conversation with the disciples, hastened to dispel all her doubts. Every time his voice sounded, it seemed that the attendees awakened from a dream and felt a surge of new strength within themselves.
"Yes, indeed,"
agreed the keeper.
"There are phenomena like propaganda and advertising. Such a cult is created by the government or the most influential, wealthy people. You mentioned fashion at the right time. These most important individuals think about how to sell more clothes and shoes. In the end, they come to the conclusion that every year or every 6 months, so to speak, they need to create a new trend. And what do they create? Sometimes, utter nonsense, excess, absurd ideas and images. All this is done in a frantic pursuit of sales, and it becomes synonymous of beauty. Then these trends are demonstrated on TV. 'Look, see what the stars are wearing, and why aren't you following fashion?' Blinded by this call, a person wants to imitate celebrities, to be in trend. They go to the store, spend all their money on tasteless things, and wear them. And people can imitate not only celebrities, but also ordinary people. But isn't it foolish? Monkeying has never helped anyone achieve inner perfection, agree?"
In this spacious hall with invisible walls, created by nature itself, the answers were immediately heard.
"Yes, of course."
"Absolutely."
Someone even remembered the famous fable, The Monkeys, and quoted a couple of lines from it.
"Master,"
came the high voice of the woman in a colorful dress and a knitted sweater casually thrown over her shoulders.
"And indeed, it's true. People so easily succumb to fashion, sometimes not even feeling any threat, like, for example, in the case of loans."
"Ah, such a paradox,"
the sage shrugged.
"The power that the advertising cult holds is immense. All sorts of nonsense are imposed on people through the means of mass stupefaction. as we rightfully call them. People are universally infected with these absurd ideas, as if by a virus, and they buy all sorts of goods. Now, on TV, they've started talking about loans, as if someone had already applied successfully, so you could go ahead and apply too. People think that now they will get phenomenally rich, and so they rush, spend money, sometimes all they have on hand. And the satisfied television, a weapon of propaganda, stands in their room and exults.
Means of mass stupefaction,
murmured the elderly man, in a long linen shirt with buttons.
People think that if something is shown on TV, then it's undoubtedly right. And cunning and enterprising people, of which there are many in the world, take advantage of this and create some flashy advertisement that a person not engaged in their own brain eagerly absorbs. They commit completely senseless acts, invest money in a financial pyramid, buy unnecessary things.
That's right,
said the master, pleased with the display of rhetorical skill and sagacity from this gray-haired gentleman.
That's why propaganda exists in the world, to control people who don't have their own opinions. And we must think about what we are shown, reflect on whether we need it at all. In general, we need to engage our intellect and analyze the impulses we receive. Advertising exists, but whether to accept it or not, it's our business. Why should I follow herd instinct? That's the question we should ask ourselves. I will act differently, in my own way. That's the conclusion we are looking for. What's best for you?
This question, spoken by the keeper, reached the ears of all the disciples and penetrated deeply into the consciousness of each of them.
What's best for me?
The young man with black hair whispered to himself.
What's best for me?
Echoed the mermaid-like girl softly.
And what's best for me?
Uttered the inner voice of the woman whose hair ends curled upwards.
For me, it's better to cultivate happinesses independently, my own unique and intimate, rather than seeking it in cars, household appliances, and loans,
said the master, emphasizing each word with a special intonation.
It's such an unforgettable state. When we were kids, we were all happy out of nothing. Why do we need a car to be happy now that we have grown up? Like everyone else has cars, but I don't. So I'll be deeply unhappy.
Great one.
Unexpectedly came the voice of another young man with his hair tied in a small ponytail.
In childhood, they also instilled in us that school grades must always be good. That's also a kind of propaganda, isn't it?
Indeed it is,
affirmed the master, looking attentively at the young man whose blue eyes vaguely outlined the lake.
Children are often told that they can only be happy when they get top marks and pass exams, comparing them to top students. After such suggestion, the child feels unhappy. They didn't get an A. They brought home a bad mark, didn't pass the exams. They don't have what others have. Even as adults, they suffer greatly, regretting that they are not like everyone else, even starting to pity themselves instead of ignoring it and thinking, why do I need this conditioning? I don't want to be conditioned by nonsense like grades and exams. I'll cultivate happiness myself. Just like in childhood, I'll start with laughter, meditation, laughing, charging myself emotionally. In that case, energy flows in the right direction. It's not imposed, not forced upon us.
Master, so it means we need to engage in more spiritual practices?
The girl in the long dress modestly suggested. She resembled a true lady from the 19th century with a pale face and dark eyes like two black currants.
Of course, engaging in practices will also help,
agreed the master, deliberately surveying the entire space with his gaze.
We need to tune in more to the state of happiness. Then there's a chance that with each passing day, you will become happier and happier. energy will flow in the right direction. And what were we taught? Oh, you got a bad mark. How bad? Pity yourself. Look, everyone's having normal children, and who are you? Shame on you. That's how parents instill false beliefs in their offspring, and as a result, a person loses the sense of happiness. Energy starts to flow towards all sorts of nonsense. The head is filled with thoughts of how to get an A, pass the exams, buy an unnecessary thing that the neighbor bought. And that's it. The state of happiness is lost, and we need to cultivate it anew. If we don't do that, happiness will never come to us. We'll just live with memories of joyful moments from childhood or youth, as if we were already old. In reality, everything is much simpler. Want to be happy? Let it be so. Create happiness yourself. Happier, more joyful, more active. There's no need to wait for something from the outside. We form the right state, ourselves. Don't lose determination, and everything becomes magnificent.
Great one.
This word flew over all the students like a bird, and then, like a butterfly, it began to flutter from blade to blade of grass. It, like a ladybug, approached each mind and touched the consciousness of people with its tiny feet.
We are the creators of our own happiness,
thought the girl in the sweater with voluminous sleeves.
I will definitely become happy. After all, here, surrounded by the wonderful nature, enlightened people, and the wise knowledge of the Keeper, am I not experiencing happiness? Because right now, I don't need anything from material or social values for happiness.
The evening was approaching, and the sky above the horizon was painted in bright orange tones. The water in the lake shimmered with gold and silver. Colors. Before the eyes of dozens of pairs, a new, beautiful, magical world emerged, where the heart knew no sorrow. The bright glow seemed distant and sweet miracle to the disciples.
Master.
A new voice rang out, flying and clear as a nightingale's trill.
How do our centers influence our dreams?
The keeper looked at the girl who asked the question. She had a pure and insightful gaze. Green eyes looked through thin strands of bangs. In the wise expression on her face, the features of childish naivety flashed in an amazing way.
How wonderful, if there's such a curious child hiding in every adult, never giving a moment's rest to their developing brain,
thought the master and replied,
Yes, each center sees its own dreams. Suppose when the instinctive center dominates, a person contemplates dreams related to food. They constantly eat as the main character, especially if they feel hungry in real life. Impulses come to them through dreams and reproduce scenes with an abundance of food. If the sexual centers are activated, then of course a person sees some partners in their dreams. Scenes of romantic relationships, intimacy, emerge before them. First, the impulse comes, and then our imagination fills in the frames corresponding to one or another center.
The keeper of knowledge easily answered questions of any kind as he himself deeply reflected on each situation in his life and turned to the higher, praying for the enlightenment of every living being. After admiring a butterfly that landed on his palm, he continued,
Sometimes impulses come from the motor center. A person in a dream runs somewhere, engages in some physical activity.
And there are prophetic dreams too,
the green-eyed girl said thoughtfully.
Prophetic dreams are precisely related to the higher centers,
noted the master.
When the higher intellectual or emotional center is activated, we see unusual, vivid dreams that we usually remember for a long time. Having seen such a dream, a person finds its meaning in the dream book, and at some point, the dream comes true. The sister of one young man who studied in our school once saw the master in a dream, but she didn't know who that person was. She shared what she had seen with her brother and emphasized that the person who appeared in her dream looked very unusual. After a more detailed description, which she gave, our student showed her a portrait of the master, and surprised, she confirmed that it was indeed him who appeared in her dream. Then this girl went to the ashram. Here's an example of a prophetic dream related to the higher center. We see pictures that come true in the future. These are kind of hints sent to us by the angels themselves. It is they who guide us on the right path and adjust our actions through dreams.
The girl with the clear green eyes, to be honest, was afraid of prophetic dreams and the gift of clairvoyance. She thought it was better not to know in advance what lays ahead, but now the fear had dissipated and, on the contrary, she even felt a little melancholy in her soul, because not a single knight had given her a prophetic dream yet, perhaps precisely because of this fear. After all, such a dream could clarify a lot.
Then life would become easier,
thought the girl.
I would know exactly how to act in one or another life situation and wouldn't torment myself with numerous doubts.
Next to her, on a white mat with whimsical golden patterns, sat a woman with a high, tightly pulled back ponytail. The sunlight shining on her dark chestnut hair endowed them with an expressive brightness. The same brightness sparkled in her wide open brown eyes. The woman looked at the master and raised her hand, wanting to ask him her question. When the sage, with his warm gaze, granted the disciple the right to speak, she smiled and began,
"Great keeper, am I correct in understanding all cults are based on the cult of self? When a person is born, they are infected with the principle of everything for oneself, so they start living a consumerist lifestyle. And to manifest the higher centers, a different cult is needed, the manifestation of which is the verb to give. So our cult is the cult of service. From the very first seminar, we tune into, for example, help the elderly and so on. That is, we spread our light outward. The rest of the cult serve only themselves. Isn't that so?"
"Yes,"
agreed the master, and a glimmer of sunset also flickered in his clear eyes.
"People are raised as egoists one way or another. For example, they are constantly compared to others. Look, you got a C, while the neighbor's kid got an A. Or, you don't have this, but others do. Or, why are you like this, while they are completely different? As a result, people become selfish because they start constantly thinking about themselves, become fixed on their own identity, while trying to imitate someone else. Most of the time, they have formed a wrong opinion about themselves. So much has been instilled in them, and now they think they are poor and unhappy, and nothing works out for them. They'll get C's all their life, even in material terms. If they experience financial difficulties, they don't want to move to a new level because they believe it's not like them. They develop such a low self-esteem, constantly pity themselves, harbor resentments, keenly feel a sense of injustice, torment themselves with suffering. These attitudes shape a selfish, unhappy person. Or, for example, a mother tells her daughter that their father is bad because he left them. The child picks up on this negative emotional state. As a result, the girl becomes unhappy, withdrawn, always suffering. This is also an example of wrong suggestion.
So parents should instill in their children the desire to help others from an early age so that they don't grow up to be such egoists?
The student with beautiful chestnut hair asked again.
Exactly,
exclaimed the keeper, and his voice resounded through the picturesque valley with the lake with a powerful echo.
Let parents rather give their child candy and suggest sharing it with friends. Isn't it great? Rejoice for your friends. They eat the candy you gave them. With such an approach, a person gets rid of egoism because they don't think about themselves, don't concentrate on their own personality, but on what they create Do something good. In their mind, there's a mood. Bring benefit. Help carry groceries to grandma. Help the old man cross the street. It's so wonderful to help people. If altruism awakens in a child, then they grow into a normal, mentally healthy adult. We must cultivate right thoughts, not worry about ourselves, but think about others, radiate light. Then a person forgets about the distorted attitudes imposed on them in childhood. They become joyful, lighthearted, and eventually find happiness.
The sun, which looked like a large fruit of an orange tree, seemed to have changed its mind about setting beyond the horizon and froze in the sky, listening to the wise words of the master. The man, who had been keeping his eyes on the sky, vibrant with all its colors, turned his gaze to the keeper and spoke.
Great one. For a cult to work, there must be an image that is created and into which a person either tunes in or doesn't. Christ preached, "Do not make for yourselves idols." So on the spiritual path, should a person be completely free from any cults? Am I correct in understanding that if a person is truly religious, they should have no idols or cults, only God comes first?
Yes.
The master eagerly confirmed the man's assumptions, whose eyes had started to tear up from prolonged contemplation of the sun.
Do not create idols for yourself. All forms are transient. The star burns in the crown of the world only under the life-giving beam. People often create cults, imitate something. They are guided by certain images. But in the end, they must free themselves from all of this. Ramakrishna believed very much in the goddess Kali, regularly worshipping her. Another yogi told him, "You have already reached a high spiritual level and must comprehend the Parabrahman, but you are still fixed on the image of Kali. Therefore, imagine that the image of the goddess dissolves. Dissolve it in space to touch the Almighty." Ramakrishna listened to his advice and began to imagine how the image of the goddess melts in his imagination. Thus, the yogi was able to get rid of the limiting image and realize the divine as it really is.
The man thanked the master for the new knowledge and understood that the spiritual power of a person is limitless. A person can create an image, which means they can also destroy it. A person can penetrate into the deep mysteries of being. They can turn into the sun and shine for those who have only known the dark side of life. Truly, the power of a person lies in the great ability to show compassion. The last question was asked by the girl in the orange sweater with fringe and a delicate bead necklace.
"Master,"
she said, and her voice sounded like a breath of fresh air that breathed into nature and into the ringing hearts of people this evening.
"Yesterday, I realized that we should not be afraid of making efforts, but afraid of not reaching God. When we come to the ashram, we face the cult of laziness, the cult of egoism, and being in the ashram, we must overcome them. So, the cult of ego and the cult of laziness are our main enemies, aren't they?"
"Yes, we need to see our plight,"
nodded the sage, resting his palm against his chest.
"I am an egoist, adhering to weak beliefs and harmful habits that hinder my development and prevent me from achieving anything. Fear, laziness, and meager thoughts torment me. My situation is sad, but why remain so ignorant, blind, or rather blinded? This needs to be deeply realized. This is what they tried to make of me in society, those who themselves have not yet seen the light. Coming to this conclusion, a person starts to get angry, and it becomes easier to breathe. A surge of energy is immediately felt. Now it's possible to do something bright, good, kind. And each of us need to get angry like this. Otherwise, we'll continue to nurture negative habits, foolish and useless thoughts, remain in a miserable state, and experience failures. everything will slip from our hands. It's precisely fury that'll help us become independent, give us a lot of strength, turn us into creators. We need to get angry with ourselves more often, recognizing our own weaknesses, faults, vices, and with the power of such life-giving anger, finally get rid of them to become wiser, more merciful. Now, my dear ones, I believe you understand how to behave.
All the disciples nodded in satisfaction, rose from their seats, and bowed to the Master, expressing their gratitude for the help he provided them during another stage of the path of knowledge. After a while, the blankets, which turned out to have a quite modest role in this profound and incredibly rich conversation, were neatly folded and now awaited a new opportunity to serve their owners. The son, having listened to the master, decided to retire as well. Tomorrow it will rise again in the sky and illuminate the whole world with its light. And only the lake had nowhere to hurry. It quietly shimmered in an orange veil, which enveloped the entire space, and watched with its gaze the happy people who wished to do good deeds. Main theses. 1. Each of the existing religions and each of the existing cults is associated with a specific center. For example, from the instinctive center emerges the religion of consumerism, from the sexual center, the cult of reproduction, from the motor center, the cult of sports, and so on. 2. If a person does not develop mindfulness, then the lower centers prevail over them. Only by establishing complete control over their attention can one transition to the higher emotional center. 3. Dreams are closely related to the centers. The images created by the imagination in a dream illustrate the plots on which a person's attention is mainly focused. 4. If a person suffers from egoism, they will always be under the influence of the lower centers. And conversely, altruism is capable of elevating a person to the higher centers.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.